What we have to think about is the UN produced its report saying that we have 11 years to avoid catastrophic climate change.
People have seen it as a box-ticking exercise in the past and not a value proposition.
This comes at a significant cost, but at a cost that if you don't invest in the buildings, you're highly unlikely to get a long-term sustainable return.
The time is now for us to make a significant change.
Hello, I'm Damien Wild, and this is another EG podcast. So much of what we talk about in the EG studio is focused on the future. That's because, I'm pleased to say, so much of this industry's thinking these days is about looking forwards, not backwards. Over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to be addressing the big overarching question: how is real estate preparing for tomorrow's world? And addressing specifically one perhaps under-discussed aspect, sustainability. From Extinction Rebellion protests to Greta Thunberg's recent impassioned warnings about the intergenerational impact of climate change, from hard-hitting accounts about the environmental cost of air travel to David Attenborough's primetime pleas for change, you would have to be especially tin-eared to miss the fact that sustainability has to be, or near, the top of the corporate agenda. And given that the United Nations estimates real estate accounts for about 40% of the world's energy consumption and a third of all carbon emissions, if the world is to meet targets for reducing carbon dependency, this industry will have to lead the change. To discuss all this and more, I'm joined by a panel of changemakers. Abigail Dean is Head of Sustainability at Nuveen. Guy Granger is EMEA CEO for JLL. Mike Sales is Chief Executive of Nuveen. And Dirk Welling is Senior Responsible Investment and Governance Specialist at APG Asset Management. Abigail, can I start with you? When we talk about the future, and the future of real estate more specifically, we tend to talk about tech, diversity, community connections. We also talk about sustainability, of course, but I'm not sure we do as much as we should. Is that the case?
I think it is, and I think that what we have to think about is the UN produced its report towards the end of last year saying that we have 11 years to avoid catastrophic climate change. So the time is now for us to make a significant change in order to act on that. And what that means for real estate is, I think, two things. One is that we need to make very meaningful changes to our buildings over the course of the next decade. And we need to have a very clear strategy on how we move buildings towards net zero carbon. So buildings need to be not consuming any more energy than they can produce from renewable sources, ideally on site. And we're a long way away from that. So as an industry, that's a real challenge for us. How do we set out that pathway very quickly? And the other thing is that there are going to be certain elements of climate change that are unavoidable. So even if we do the best possible job we can in the next decade, there will still be unavoidable climate change impacts. And that will have an impact on real estate value. So the other thing for the industry is to consider is, what's that going to look like, and what does that mean for the properties that we already own?
So presumably we should have started ideally, or everyone should be further advanced than they are. But what does the real estate industry need to do in the next 12 months to stand a chance of making the progress it needs to do in the next decade?
Well, on a very basic level, probably all buildings are able to reduce by about 10 to 20% the energy that they use just by good practice measures, such as putting in technology to monitor when energy is being used and when it isn't, replacing any lights that haven't yet been replaced with LEDs, making sensible upgrades to heating and cooling, and putting in place good behavioural measures. And these are not expensive things that need to be done. And there's a certain amount of inertia in the industry about cracking on with that and getting that done. So in the next 12 months, I think it's about doing that, and then it's about identifying what are those more impactful, longer term measures that we need to put in place to really transform buildings over the next couple of decades.
Okay, thank you. Guy, we seem to be recreating climate change in the EG studio this morning. It's very warm in here for effect, but you were nodding at inertia there. Do you think that the industry is guilty of inertia?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think people have seen it as a box-ticking exercise in the past and not a value proposition. And we need to really change the mindset around this, because there is a huge level of responsibility, and leaders and the property industry needs to actually grab hold of that responsibility and lead by example. Having a European role, I see some cultures and countries that are significantly more advanced in their thinking, They definitely turn this into value rather than just thinking about the cost of implementing it, which is where most of the UK focus is. This is expensive to do. The supply chain isn't quite ready for it. Will I get a return on my investment? We need to change the mindset and say, if you don't do this, actually, your asset in the future will be less valuable. The occupiers are really demanding it. I mean, far more than people are giving them credit for. It's become an employee value proposition rather than a request from occupiers. And those investors, developers that are not responding now will be found out.
Okay. And Mike, I want to come back to some of the points that Guy raised there around whether the UK really is leading or lagging here. But I'm also interested in who's driving the change. And Guy talked about the occupier and employees driving the change. But it's, you know, it's within your gift as well, isn't it, as someone who can deploy significant sums of capital to drive this change?
Look, I think that's right partially. When I look at Nuveen as a great example, and you know, without plugging the brand too much, we did rebrand at the beginning of this year, and we wanted a message and a vision that encapsulated some of the things that Guy and Abigail have talked about, and that was to be a premier global investment manager in tomorrow's world for the benefit of our clients and the enduring benefit of our clients and society. And I think that laid down the marker that we've got clients' capital to invest. And Guy touched on probably the biggest point for an investment manager and for a client looking for investment return is this comes at a significant cost. But at a cost, as Guy correctly stated, that if you don't invest in the buildings, similarly with the tech, we've seen that in technology, particularly in the retail sector, you're highly unlikely to get a long-term sustainable return.
I think I'll just add to that. Mike just said something that's really important, and it's about the longevity. I think you have to really consider, am I thinking for the long term here, or am I just trying to make money in the next few years? And I think there needs to be a lot more responsibility about long-term thinking. And by long-term, actually, what the UN have said is 11 years. 11 years before there is a moment in time that we can't turn back. That is not a long time.
It's not long-term in real estate terms, is it?
No, correct. But actually, unless you get into a longer-term mindset, like Nuveen are, you're never going to achieve those great steps. You're just going to do tactical things. This is strategic.
Okay. Mike?
Yeah, so I think, you know, just picking up on one of the points Guy raised there. So when we look at investments today, on behalf of our clients, and by the way, our clients are more than helping us, you know, focus our attentions on this as well with their requirements, not just the occupiers. I think the whole world is far more sustainable ready, if that's the right expression. But I look at some of the things we're doing on the climate change piece, and the key for us, as Guy alludes to, is we've got to, you know, when we do this research on things like climate change, and we're very big on cities around the world and invest and concentrating our investment focus, we've got to act on some of these things. And we've got to act on them now because value will be diluted in some of these locations over time. So I think it's, you know, it's putting up and shut up a little bit, but it's definite action is required in the short term.
Okay, thank you. And Dirk, I wanted to let the conversation run a little before bringing you in here. You've been leading on this agenda for some time at APG. When you hear the conversation around the table, is that typical of conversations you have in the UK? And how does the UK agenda compare to others around the world? Are we leading or lagging?
It's difficult to point at a specific country or so who's leading or lagging. I think when looking at, especially on climate change, it's a global problem and that cannot be solved in one country. And when looking at the UK real estate market, one of the discussions we often have is about the operational responsibility when it comes to energy use. Who is responsible for what, but also on the limitations of FRI leases, often used as an excuse that they cannot influence the performance of buildings. And when these are really hurdles, then these hurdles should be solved, I think. Otherwise, we cannot combat climate change in the long term. And a key risk what we see in the longer term is for climate change, there are two types of risks. One is the physical risks as a consequence of climate change, which will also happen with the 2-degree scenario. And the other thing is the transition risk more stringent legislation will come in place, and that will come with extra cost. When you have not factored those kind of costs in your current calculations, then that will hit the returns of the real estate investments.
Okay, and of course it does require a global set of solutions to the problem. But I do wonder where the UK stands. The UK tends to think it leads on real estate and is particularly progressive around it. But in tackling the sustainability aspects, are there better examples around the world than you see in the UK?
Well, one of the examples I found very interesting was a new law that was that will come in force in New York when it comes to carbon emissions. They have set quite stringent targets towards 2030, so that buildings in New York City cannot emit above more carbon emissions than a certain amount. And I think that is really, they are really leading now at the moment when it comes to this kind of legislation. But we would expect that other cities will follow as well. And hopefully then maybe London will will follow. But and these kind of examples are really interesting to see. Okay, what will the legislation do in future as well?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Damien, I'd come in there and spare Dirk's blushes a little bit. I think there are certain countries who are ahead in this. You look at Holland, obviously. You look at the Nordics, and you probably look at another sophisticated market like Australia as a country that has seen this coming and is probably equally, if not more, far more prepared to move on some of these things than perhaps we are in the UK at the moment, for some of the reasons Dirk alluded to when he talked about the New York carbon emissions cap.
And Mike, where do you think the driver for change will come in the UK then? Will it be legislative? Will it be investor-led? Will it be occupier-led?
I think all of the above, but I think legislative, if I could even say it, is going to be pretty important, because sometimes you need a stick to solve a problem. Now, we can all go down the route we're going down, and you know, one of the great best examples for us in the office sector, which is we've got retail that's causing everybody a lot of problems at the moment, but believe you me, with what's required to deliver some of the topics we've discussed today, the office sector is going to come under extreme pressure in terms of the amount of capital expenditure required to make a building, you know, semi-sustainable. So, you know, somebody in Dirk's country, we've teamed up with his Edge Technologies, responsible for one of the most sustainable buildings in Amsterdam. We've teamed up with them in the UK, in Germany, just teaming up with them for the first time in the US. So I think it's everything you do now is all about sustainability, but it's also looking at, you know, your legacy stock and how you deal with that, because that comes at a cost.
I would just pick up on the legislative point. I think that we are seeing some legislation emerging. New York is definitely one of the best examples, and the Netherlands as well has started to put in place some legislation around trying to phase out gas use in buildings by 2030, for example. But I think there's a very real risk for the industry that we will see at some point in the next decade quite a sudden and quite an intense legislative response to the issue of climate change, because the reality is that governments have not led the way on this, and what we know is necessary is not being put in place. And at the point at which governments have that collective moment when they appreciate the true risk, and I think that's, we're very close to that, they are going to have to put in much more stringent legislative programs than maybe industry would be comfortable with. So that is something that as an industry we're going to have to deal with within the next decade, and those organizations that have started to get ahead of the curve are going to be much better placed to deal with that.
Guy, do you see those organisations getting on the front foot?
Some of them, yeah. But it will definitely be the ones that have a longer-term vision. There's a lot of short-term pressures out there. And if I'm honest, it's not organisations in themselves that change their strategy towards this. It's individuals. It's leaders of business who stand up and say, yes, I'm going to make this part center and part of my strategy going forward. And so I think we need to ignite that fire inside a few leaders out there to really prioritize this. And legislation will come, but we shouldn't wait for that, because then you're in reactive mode. And I am chairing the task force for business in the community on the circular economy, and as such I've had opportunity to meet up twice with Michael Gove, and to be honest, his focus at the moment is a little bit more around plastics and energy. And actually, the UK has been really good on renewable energy. But buildings will come. But let's face it, over the next 30 years, lots more people are going to move to cities. They're going to become a lot more congested. An extra 2.5 billion people will move to cities by 2050. We're already consuming 2.5 times what the world can produce, particularly in major Western cities. And during that period, only 1 in 5 buildings will be demolished and redeveloped. So it's like Mike said, we have to repurpose and reimagine all of the buildings for future state. And that is actually much tougher to do than rebuilding. So there's a big task ahead for us.
And when you're talking to clients, I do want to come back to you as an occupier guy at a moment about what you're doing there to drive change. But when you're advising clients, what's that balance? What's the sort of approximate proportion for when it falls on slightly deaf ears and people who are prioritising, you know, returns or costs? And how receptive are people?
Well, it depends on the people themselves. It is very important for me as an advisor to come up with a business case for this. This shouldn't just be seen as something that I should do because it's the right thing to do. It might be the right thing to do, but it's good to come up with a business case as well. So I'm very much looking at case studies of other parts of the world where carbon neutral or fully circular developments have taken place. And the Nordics and Netherlands, I mean, there's lots of examples, quite frankly. They're up and running and they're producing higher rates of return than a development next door that hasn't put it in place. That is evidence that it works. And we just have to have a little bit more courage in the UK, because quite frankly, a lot of the time in the UK, we look at what our peer group is doing. And if our peer group is not doing anything, then we are not necessarily the pioneers that start. And I've faced this ourselves. We've been searching for a new office in London. And because I've got a passion around this, I wanted a carbon neutral building. I wanted to find a carbon neutral building. And that is extremely hard to find in London, which is amazing. I mean, I find that shocking, actually.
Okay. You don't think that's going to be possible for your next move?
Well, we're looking at it. But I mean, the fact that I'm finding it hard in itself says that London is not really future thinking enough, or at least some of the developers aren't. But quite frankly, London's been in a great place. You don't need to. Demand has been very, very strong. So it takes long-term thinkers to really pioneer and create something new. When they do, I'll try and make a case that will receive much better returns on investment in the future.
Okay, Mike, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, I think look, there's a step change with every office building that's developed in terms of its well-being, so that we're easily pleased as an occupier with some, you know, relatively superficial changes, which is perhaps part of Guy's point. I think the interesting thing from an investment perspective that we're looking at is the basis of valuation. So have the valuers got some of these buildings that clearly need an extraordinary amount of work done on them to bring them into the 21st century, if that's the right expression? You know, are they off the correct basis? Because as we all know, in certain sectors, if you're not working off the right basis, then whatever you spend on these buildings is not going to, let alone generate a return, it'll look negative. So I think there is, you know, dare I say it, you know, with where values are today, you know, there's some pain around the corner.
And if I could just come in there, I think that there is a real challenge with the valuation community in that they are, by their very nature, backward looking. And we intrinsically as an industry know that buildings that are more energy efficient and are more sustainable will be better future proofed and will hold their value better into the future. But that is not reflected in the way that they are valued at the moment. And that makes it difficult for owners of property to invest significant sums of money in making them more sustainable. And that's a real challenge that we have to get on top of.
And that will require a stick to change, Abigail, presumably.
Mm. I think so, yes.
But when looking at valuators, I think one of the things what strikes me is when you would ask the same company to, often they have different teams for sustainability and for the valuations. And ideally, those teams should be integrated. It should not be a separate team. So the when valuing an asset, the valuator should also understand the sustainability credentials of an asset. And to date, I think it's not the case. And it would be very helpful when, for example, we promote, for example, in the UK, BREEAM in use certification. When you value an asset, it would be very helpful when the valuator would immediately also issue the BREEAM in use certificate or something like that. It's not about certification. It's like on an annual basis, understand the real quality of an asset. And when BREEAM in use is not perfect, then improve BREEAM. Because often what we tend to do in real estate, when a certain standard doesn't work, we want to invent a new standard. So with accounting standards, we also, you won't develop a new standard. No, you want to improve a standard.
And the one country where there is a very clear proven link between sustainability performance and value is Australia. Yeah. And what they have there is the NABERS rating, which is an operational energy performance rating. We don't have that in Europe. We have BREEAM, but it's not an operational performance rating. We have the EPC certificate, but it's not based on actual energy consumption. So where they have successfully introduced this rating system in Australia, you have a direct link between the amount of rent that occupiers will pay and how energy efficient the building is. So that would be a game changer, I think, in Europe, if we could introduce an operational performance rating.
And to Dirk's point, would that have to be additional, or could it replace existing standards?
Absolutely, it could be. And I think, in fact, BREEAM are actively looking at incorporating that into their BREEAM and use certification.
Ideally, certification schemes then should take this on board, because even when you look at LEED or BREEAM, they are not sufficiently tackling climate change at the moment. A BREEAM Outstanding or a LEED Platinum does not mean that that the building will meet the Paris Agreement. And that's one of the things that they, it's a blind spot maybe for the certification bodies. And that's why we have been involved in an initiative where we want to understand, let's say, the 2-degree scenario of individual buildings. So there will be a certain pathway towards 2050 with a certain amount of carbon emissions which a building can or may emit to ensure that it will meet the 2-degree scenarios. That will become more important. And then the investors should understand, is there sufficient capex involved in the asset business plan to meet that target in the long term?
And Dirk, Guy and others talked earlier about some good examples around the world, whether it's in the Nordics, whether it's the Netherlands, or even in New York, as you pointed out. Where that change has come, has it been led by the head or the heart? Is the first reaction a more emotional, we must do something, and then other things fall into line? Or has it been driven by someone or some event?
Often you think, you see with these kind of initiatives, there are a few people who really have a clear drive to achieve something. Like in the Netherlands, you have the Dutch Green Building Council. They have developed a Paris proofness target. So an office building can consume 50 kilowatt hours per square meter, and then it's considered to be Paris proof. When an office building consumes more than 50 kilowatt hours per square meter, it's not Paris proof yet. And that's a clear target. Ideally, that should be available for different asset classes within real estate. But this is an initiative by the Dutch Green Building Council, which is more voluntary or a little bit ahead of legislation. And legislation is maybe more for the laggards, and it's often to be good to be ahead of the curve.
Okay. And Mike, have you changed your investment criteria on the back of this this change of focus and this agenda?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing that for the last... I mean, I'm looking at Abby and she's giving me a pained look. Abby came in 3 years ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago. And we've been changing things ever since. So it is very much part of the investment process in terms of ticking certain boxes, and the latest of which, of course, is climate change. So from an investment process perspective, absolutely. Is it there? Is it perfect yet? Probably not. But that's the challenge.
And when you look over your shoulder, do you see others following behind you, or is it a thinner group than you'd like to see?
No, I think there are plenty behind, or and even at the same level and some above. So there's no prize here for you're just trying to do the best you can with the resources you can. So I think everyone knows, because people like APG, one of the world's largest investors, there's going to be, when you're filling in an RFP for a mandate to make it at a very, to put it at the basic level, the requirements now that clients look for have gone up a notch. So, you know, they're to be sort of congratulated in terms of, or the investor fraternity has definitely got it at the heart of everything they're doing at the moment.
Okay, and Guy, not just a box-ticking exercise. If it's there in the criteria, how do you strike the right balance there?
Well, I don't think so. I think you have to be visionary about this as well, because I think there is a real proposition behind your brand about what your contribution is, not just to investors, and that should bring a greater employee sense of purpose, but also greater attractiveness from a shareholder perspective as well. Most of the companies that are really driving this as a strategic priority are either listed or long-term investment fund managers, where they take the responsibility a bit more seriously. There are great agile private companies, but largely, you know, a lot of people are doing the minimum to get a return on their investment and to attract occupiers. This involves going a step further. It's not easy to do, if I'm honest. There is a whole question mark around supply chain. If you, for example, in the UK, if you are repurposing or redeveloping a building and want to use recycled or repurposed cement, then it's a whole different question about how you do it. If you're constructing, you want zero waste from that construction site. Again, it's another different question you have to ask. So I don't think you can pick off one or two of these things. If you make it central to your strategy, I am convinced in the future it will bring shareholder value if you're listed, and huge employee value if you're not, because you've got a real driving purpose, and actually you're doing something which not only contributes towards helping climate change, but honestly, and this is critical, it will attract more demand in the future. Are you telling me that if you're developing a multifamily development at the moment that you want to rent out those apartments in 5 years' time, if it's carbon neutral or zero waste, that definitely will be more attractive to all generations?
That's quite a hurdle to get over, though, isn't it, Abigail, to move from that that sense that this is defensive and about CSR and moving into a world where it's creating value?
Yeah, I think it's a real mind shift for us. And being honest, as an industry, we're not that good at changing. We do things more slowly. And I think, you know, thinking to the points that Guy was making about changing building materials and changing the way we develop buildings, our development industry in particular don't like doing things differently. They like sticking to the tried and tested formulas and taking quite a low risk approach. So, you know, we've talked about, could we introduce more timber into our buildings? And it's very difficult to think about doing things in that different way. So.
And if I could just go back to the occupiers and something that Abby said earlier, you know, there are a lot of easy wins out there. There are a lot of things that you can do. Even our occupiers are looking at how they operate in space. So it's not just about the buildings they take. It's about what they do when they're inside. And there's a massive focus on how much waste am I creating? How much energy am I using? Is it renewable energy? What's the lighting systems? Do I buy them? Do I rent them? Do I take part in the sharing economy? And just like Dirk said, I think investors have to get involved in that occupational story as well, that operational story. Too much in the past, our industry has been very passive. Sign up an FRI lease for 15 years and it's over to you, occupier. Well, let's get more active. Let's really get involved in how this building operates, because then we can create truly sustainable buildings.
But I think, you know, to add to that point, I think it's coming. It's when you look at co-working, you look at what WeWork are doing in the space in terms of galvanizing, if you like, the lease term and the, you know, the shortness of it and the flexibility. I think once that becomes the norm, as it has done, for example, say in the outlet sector and the retail market, people see the benefits of that. It allows you to charge higher rents, to charge for some of these amenities. And also the most important thing for the occupier, it gives them that flexibility. So I think it's coming. It's just probably not as quickly as we would like. But look, people have different views on WeWork. I think they're terrific, and I think the way they have come into the market and dominated that co-working space and sort of put their print on offering up flexible space, I think, you know, it shows that things can be done quickly in one area of the market.
And perhaps the most striking thing is how these things can't be compartmentalized, whether it's tech, whether it's the employer proposition, whatever the driving force for change, we have to view it in a connected way, perhaps in a way that real estate hasn't done in the past.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for, but we will come back to this, rest assured. Thank you, Abigail. Thank you, Guy. Thank you, Mike. And thank you, Dirk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.